I'm your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to Alchemy, the podcast all about building a business on the front lines of the new economy.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. We've got a fun show. We're going to change it up a little bit. We have a little bit of a debate going. I've got Brian Rosen with me. He's managing general partner at InvestBev. He's also an advisor to Philo. Brian, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me early on a Monday morning.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know you do this like every day, so this, you know, comes second nature to you. But, you know, for everybody that's tuning in right now, Brian and I were chatting last week and just catching up. And if you don't know Brian, he's got an amazing background, has done a tremendous amount of work in the spirits industry. So he's currently the president at BevStrat. He's also the chairman of Growth Beverage. He's one of our strategic advisors at Philo. He's also coming from the wine and spirit world, so he's the CEO at Sam's Wine and Spirits. He's also working at PricewaterhouseCoopers in the beverage division as partner. And Brian, it would take me too long to go through your accolades of awards between Forbes and Retailer of the Year and all that stuff, but you had a very impressive career as the top authority in the adult beverage space.
Well, first of all, it's almost like I wrote the bio myself. So thank you for that. Look, beverage business has been very good to us. Historically, my whole family, we were the first liquor license in Chicago after Prohibition ended in 1933. That grew to be the nation's largest retail wine store, with distribution in 17 states and physical stores all over Illinois. And I thought, well, I'm pretty good at this beverage thing. Let me keep it going. So went to PwC, ran the Bev division there, founded a few companies in beverage. And now I'm fortunate enough with a great team around to really have a good, deep, I feel, understanding of the category. And with our investment firm, InvestBev, we've got positions in a lot of booze and some cannabis beverage. I'm happy to kick off the conversation today and see where it all goes.
I love it. So Brian, I think there's a few, important topics that I definitely want to cover. Obviously, consumer trends, are super important. One of the things that we've seen, at least in the cannabis space, right, is that obviously with legalization, it's not a surprise that cannabis sales are on the rise. There are, kind of competing articles that have been published in the last few months that, while cannabis is rising, alcohol sales are, either flat or could be declining. And so that could indicate somewhat of a shift in consumer preference towards cannabis. And I think, I definitely want to talk about legalization because, obviously cannabis is still federally illegal. But cannabis being legal in, more and more states is obviously leading to increased sales and market penetration, right?
Sure.
I think there are definitely there's a core group of people that are like, I love my, martini on a Friday night and maybe also a joint. And then there's other people that are moving into that kind of what they call, quote, California sober, right? Where they're not drinking, but they're still consuming cannabis. And even I've been seeing articles about psilocybin as well. So there is definitely I think another point to bring up, this kind of younger generation is really focusing on health, right? And they're looking at alcohol as somewhat having negative effects on their, physical and mental health. So they're kind of shifting towards other means of, relaxing. So I think there's definitely like a lot of pros and cons, right, between alcohol and cannabis. And so I think we'll use this time today as a healthy debate. So Brian, I pulled up a bunch of articles here that I think are fairly relevant. So I think I'll kind of just give everyone a quick synopsis and then we can discuss.
Sure.
So first article from MarketWatch, right? This was literally right in the beginning of the year, 2023. Basically, cannabis is eating into alcohol sales, analyst study shows. And I remember when this came out, they were basically looking at data from Cowen. And basically was the impact of legal cannabis on the sales of beer, wine, and alcoholic beverages. And so basically what the article was saying here is, you know, cannabis was continuing to gain traction and basically we're coming in around $26 billion in sales from 2022. And so there's obviously a big increase in the size of that market. But one of the things that they had said is that alcohol sales, the growth is underperforming in cannabis by 0.6%, but then jumped to 1.1% in legal states. So this is an interesting study. I definitely want to get my hands around where the numbers came from, whether it was like, did they look at, you know, maybe the, you know, Columbia Cares and the GTIs, or was this the whole kind of kit and caboodle, right?
Well, look, I know the same articles you're referencing, and I'm of a different ilk. And I think that a lot of times headlines are fear driven, that's a fact. And I think that it's clickbait, and this is what's happening as I see it kind of in the weed versus booze debate, which sounds like what we're talking about.
Yeah.
For a while when cannabis was first getting legalized in the very early days, it was all the booze companies. I'm talking the big multinational players, these 16, 17, $20 billion companies that really can move legislation one way or the other, which whatever means they'd like to do that. It was a fear factor. They were protecting turf. And the theory was that someone buying cannabis is someone that isn't buying beverage. And after years and years of data, what's really happening is the people that are getting smoked in beverage, excuse the pun, are the nondescript, cheap, average brands, the generalist brands, a Jack and Coke, or give me a bourbon and soda, or a vodka and tonic. The vodka piece, the bourbon piece, those are the ones that are able to get substituted for weed. The generalist beers, the Bud, Miller, Mick Light, Mick Golden, those kind of things. Because there's nothing to them, the consumer is able to shift through and around and substitute with cannabis. As you get to more premiumization and category, then weed is not a substitute for, it's an addition to or instead of, but at the highest level. But the everyday consumer of average and beverage is the same everyday consumer in weed, and they're interchangeable. So the fear factor is in that world, in the generalist of beverage. And so these headlines are once a week about weed this and booze that, and this is a knockdown, drag out fight. There's room for both, frankly, in the category. It just matters on really what the consumer decides is the sessionable libation of choice, I guess I would say.
So here's something that happened the end of the year, which I thought was very telling and interesting. And we haven't heard a ton of information about this, but, you know, Tilray out of Canada, which, you know, is very, everybody knows Tilray in the cannabis space, right? They've done a ton of acquisitions, both on the pharma side and also the recreational side for cannabis. They bought Montauk Brewing Company out by me in the Hamptons in November. And so I thought that was very interesting in the sense of like, okay, are they planning, now that New York is legal, did they see that as a really good opportunity, you know, from a distribution perspective to say, hey, here's a really, you know, cool premium brand that we know people love, right? And it's, I don't know if you, have you ever had Montauk beer?
I have. I like it quite a bit.
They have all sorts of interesting, you know, IPAs and, you know, lager.
Yeah, it's a great brewery.
It's a great brewery, but they have one called Montauk Watermelon.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know, it does have like a hint of watermelon, but I don't think it's made with any watermelon. But I absolutely love it with a burger. I find it so interesting that they bought a very local, amazing brand, of course, but like, do they have the intentions of deploying a THC beverage in the future, knowing that New York is obviously a massive state from a legalization perspective? What's your take there?
Well, there's two things. If any of the listeners have been to New York in the summer, it smells of urine and weed, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, walking around Manhattan. So the legalization, surprisingly enough, and I've been following it pretty closely, the legalization of marijuana in New York, what it really has done is it hasn't been the panacea that people thought it was, because for years, New Yorkers have found their way through gray market marijuana and with lower taxation and perhaps better strains available, the retail portion of it is a little slower out of the gate than it hoped. Still very popular and very positive, but slower out of the gate nonetheless. We have at InvestBev, we have a $1 million+ investment in CAN. Mm-hmm. CAN is the most recognizable brand name in cannabis beverage. It's based in California, and we like the investment because, and this is to your point, Jeff, we like the investment because at some point a beverage company is going to come in and is going to need that mark as they stake a bigger claim in cannabis beverage. So a Diageo or Constellation, et cetera, will come in and will need that as a beachhead. So we feel good about that. What we don't feel good about, what we are challenged about in the cannabis space is that every state of which you sell retail, you have to have a growing facility in state, as you know. So that's the Montauk play, right? That makes perfect sense in that regard, that New York is the biggest city in America. And if you can get access to it through a back door, if you will, on the brewery side, you kind of have your facility in the same place as your license, which I think is great. Where the gloves are really going to come off is when the Fed does become legal, and then you have scalability and you've got cross-state transport, and then it will be really, not only is it culturally accepted now, but it will become ultra mainstream at that point.
Yeah. Well, I think too, that's a great point. I think if we look at the current, look at the alcohol space right now, like beer, wine, spirits, not really in New York, but elsewhere, you can buy it in the supermarket, right?
Yes.
You can buy literally beer, but you can't buy wine in the supermarket in New York.
That's correct.
And by the way, it's so funny because when I'm out of state traveling, if I'm in like, you know, Florida or Ohio, I mean, it's just the weirdest thing to be in a supermarket and buying really good wine, right? I think
Prohibition era rule that was put in place so that liquor stores don't put grocery stores out of business and vice versa. So everyone gets like their piece.
It's interesting. So like, I thought that was amazing, but obviously from a regulatory, you know, challenge, right? You know, obviously cannabis is not legal in all states, and you certainly can't buy it at a supermarket, right? So there's obviously some, you know, challenges that inhibit, you know, full on growth for this space, right? But that's also because alcohol is obviously, you know, it's regulated at the federal level, right? And there's an established market there.
Oh, by the way, real quickly, liquor stores are the natural selling point for cannabis.
Right.
They scan IDs, they check IDs. They're used to compliance selling.
Right.
And grocery stores are not. And so right now where I live in Illinois, you can go into a dispensary, and frankly, they're beautiful. They look like Apple stores. And that varies by state, right? Because dispensaries in Colorado look like 7-Elevens, like convenience stores, and dispensaries in Illinois look like Apple stores. So you get all across the gamut. Here in Florida, where I am today, the dispensaries are not, the medical dispensaries are not really set up like Apple stores. So by Apple store, I mean, by the way, pretty, beautiful, well-designed, thoughtfully furnitured. They're really pretty places. But I think that liquor stores, and certain liquor stores that pass certain compliance tests and regulation tests, would be a natural selling point for cannabis as it becomes more and more mainstream. And you could expect that, and you heard it here, folks, you can expect in 3 to 4 years for the liquor store to be the dispensary store, be the one and the same.
A lot of sense, right? They should do that.
Yeah.
I think also from a, you know, real estate perspective, right? There's, you know, it has to be zoned correctly, of course, but I almost wonder if, you know, liquor stores and cannabis dispensaries are zoned the same way. That would be an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, the only issue with that is I think that cannabis stores can't get a federal mortgage on the land. Right, they can't get it. So that's, there are investors that have popped up around that industry, like New Lake Capital Partners, et cetera, that lend, that buy the land that of which cannabis stores sit. Mm-hmm. And liquor stores, you can get a mortgage because it's just a building, a commercial use building. So that's once the federal hurdle is cleared, then a lot of these other ancillary hurdles go away. Mm-hmm. And then you're in business to the mass market.
So Brian, let's switch gears a little bit, because I feel like this is an important topic. I think that, you know, is widely kind of unknown, but starting to build a little bit on the trend side. Gen Z generation, they are literally giving up. Lots of them are giving up everything, right? We're saying cannabis, sex, drinking, right? They're basically taking part in far less risky.
None of that sounds fun, by the way, given that one.
Seriously. So, you know, basically that there's all these, you know, studies that have been coming out of, you know, social science and medicine, that these kids that were born in the 90s, right, but they're partaking in far less risky behavior than, you know, people like us. And I think, you know, one of the things that I was actually catching up on is obviously, you know, you got like helicopter parents, you know, that we never really had. You had, you know, all of these strange times, if you will, in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years with COVID and everything else and rising costs, that these people are actually, you know, they're totally different than us, right? And this is kind of like the future generation. I can totally see the health angle, right? Obviously, and by the way, I like my cannabis for sleeping at night, and I like having a martini or a beer, depending on, and I love my wine too. Like, I'm still a very big proponent of, you know, I enjoy alcohol, right? I enjoy a good shot to
enjoy,
right? A good shot enough to pop from France or Jagonda, it's like my favorites. And then I love my martinis, right? Like my martini, I drink a kettle up with nothing, no vermouth and just olives. That's like my Friday or Saturday night drink of choice. But Brian, I'm sure that you probably know this, is like you have a nice dinner, you have a dinner party, you have friends over, you have a few martinis, you have a few glasses of wine, and then that next morning is not a lot of fun, especially in our age.
It's my next morning today, frankly.
Exactly. So I could see why these younger kids are like, you know what, we're going to hold on the alcohol because it's bad for your liver, bad for your brain, and it makes you sick. Like, what do you think about all this kind of change in mentality for the younger generation, which, by the way, is the future generation of this country?
So this goes back to what I kind of had said earlier, is some of this stuff is kind of bullshit, right?
You know, a lot of young people that are like, oh yeah, I don't drink, I don't smoke.
Right. I get all that. And so
I see it out there for sure.
I know you see it, but your sample size is not as big as it could be. So let me give you an example. Every year, there's a movement. Every few years, there's a movement, whether it's the Better For You or Low Elk movement, whether it's Dry January, Celibate Sunday, whatever it is, right? There's
sober, like
all of it. Sober Curious.
Yeah.
These, which is such a bullshit word anyway, Sober Curious. Okay. I'm curious about being sober. Well, okay. That's how it feels when you sleep. You're sober. These are real things. These are movements, but you have to look at this multi-billion dollar industry. And then as a percentage, the amount of people that are really doing these things are really less than 1% of the overall consumption public. And so I always bristle at the, hey, how does Dry January affect business? It doesn't affect business, because if you're anything like anybody, Dry January is a great idea on New Year's Day, because you've been lit up the night before and likely the whole month of December. And so you're going to detox, you're going to clean, and you do it for as long as you can, or as long as opportunity allows. And then you're back to the ways. Mm-hmm. None of these things are forevers. And so we don't pontificate on, kind of hype trends. I believe, and I agree with you, that there is a segment of people that are abstaining from any number of vices. But I would maintain that throughout history, and there's a lot of data to this, says these are movements in time, but they're not the whole clock. And these trends, while maybe top of mind now and sober curious and dry January and better for you and low elk and drink substitution and blah, 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 there's an audience for it all, but it's going to be a micro sliver of the overall consumption public. So I don't pay it too much mind other than the fact that people that are building, there's a bar in New York now, Jeff, or a liquor store that's only non-elk. It's in Grand Central Station, and it's only non-alcoholic. All it sells is non-elk. Well, I mean,
What's the point?
Right. What's
the freaking point?
There is no point, and that's my point, right? So it's great to hop on the trend and be part of the trend, but this guy is spending millions in inventory and lease and a storefront on a trend that is not a forever trend.
Right.
And so I don't pay it much attention. I have to be being in my position as general partner, I have to be aware of it. Even in Price Waterhouse, back in the day, we studied the effect of low and no elk on the overall consumption public. And it was a blip of a blimp. And so I applaud the people that are abstaining, and these younger people that are smoking weed instead of drinking, or microdosing instead of smoking weed, or whatever it is. At the end of the day, throughout a whole lifetime, it all balances out just fine.
All right. So before we go, Brian, so you were big.
I was just getting started. Are we going?
Well, I mean, we try to keep these to 25 minutes. But Brian, you talked about being a big investor in Can, right?
Yes.
And, I know Luke pretty well. And so I met him years ago, and we hung out in Miami during Benzinga last year. And, obviously New York just became legal, but he sent it to me.
Yeah.
I remember that when he sent me the box that the can was in, it basically said, I'm trying to remember what the actual words were. It was something like, here to ruin your relationship with alcohol, on the box, which I thought was pretty genius.
Yeah.
And by the way, I thought the products were actually really good and delicious and, kind of like just a little bit in there to give you a nice buzz.
Yeah. The products are great.
But I mix it with vodka.
Wait, what did you do? You mixed it with vodka?
Yeah.
Oh, how'd that go?
It was good.
Oh, I've never done that. That's good.
There's a few flavors that they have, like cardamom and
lavender, and yeah.
It's like really delicious and, a little bit of sweetness in there. So like it can be diluted. You know what I mean? Like I don't like sweet beverages. But they were delicious. And so I feel like, a little topper of vodka in there made it even better. But I think for a lot of people that, kind of see that packaging, they might be like, this could replace my alcohol consumption, because
you're
making a beverage where you still kind of get that nice buzz, but it's healthier somewhat.
Yeah. And so we are an investor in Can, and the reason and the logic behind that, and in fact, my chief investment officer sits on their board as well. So full disclosure there. Can was and is an easy investment for us for a couple things. We feel Luke and his team are great brand entrepreneurs, and they are very good at marketing the shit out of that brand, and viral in a way, and creative and irreverent, and I think that resonates with the consumption public for sure, especially the people that you're actually speaking about in the prior question, this kind of young, hip, noble, cause-driven, etc. Drinker. What we liked about it is twofold. It's a blend of cannabis and beverage. Mm-hmm. We do feel that Luke coming to market and we're legal with a THC beverage is doing quite well. And then now there's the Delta piece of this whole thing, where you can be sold in more and more outlets nationally, is taking off as well. And so we think the cannabis beverage is here to stay. The one thing I would say And that's why we invested. The one thing I would say that's interesting to me, and this could be a moment in time as well. Mm-hmm. People go to, and you probably see this in your data, people are going to Curaleafs and other kind of dispensary type stores. And they're looking not for this chill 4-pack can of can, they're looking for this 100-milligram jar of concentrate or bottle where you put a little bit of it in a water or you drink a bottle cap full just as a shot. And you're, it's the getting high the fastest, cheapest way. Mm-hmm. And that too, I believe, is a trend because as cannabis comes more mainstream, there's going to be a social aspect to it of, hey, I'm drinking a can and I'm sitting around with my buddies watching the game, as opposed to, hey, I want to get messed up, I want to get high, I'm going to do it as quickly as possible and then go out. So I think there's a, within the beverage movement, within THC, is another battle brewing of kind of slow and low or high and hard, right? Do I want to get high, quick, fast, and move on? Or do I want it to be as a social activity? And it's the equivalent of shots of Jägermeister against a slow drinking martini, right? One is more occasionally occasion-driven and sessionable, and one is let's get messed up. And so that's the new struggle that's going on within the beverage cannabis space.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'll tell you, like I was in San Francisco a couple years ago, and, you know, being able to use like Ease or Weed Maps for delivery to your hotel is phenomenal. You know, you go on the app, you pick what you want. And I happened to have been in San Francisco, this is like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and it was 420. And in the, you know, the delivery, they gave me like, you know, some free like THC energy beverage. Uh-huh. And I was actually like going to a conference and I'm like, okay, this seems like legit, like energy. And I was feeling a little tired. Well, I didn't actually read it very well. It was like 20 milligrams of THC, which to me is a lot. Like I generally will do maybe 5.
Yeah.
I had to abort mission. Like,
I've been
in the hotel room and I was looking in the mirror and like all freaked out and paranoid. That is not for me ever.
Like, well, you don't know it, right? Like there's those big bottles of stuff. Just a great example. I went looking for can in Illinois over the summer of last year and they didn't have can, was out of stock. But they had, well, just try this. Okay. So I bought a 100-milligram bottle of X and they said, but be careful, drink it ice cold and only put it in a bottle cap because too much is too much.
Right.
And that's no fun to me. And I'll give you a little beverage trick that works in just relating to that last comment about, you know, a 12-ounce bottle versus an 8-ounce can. Or a 16-ounce bottle. In beverage, when we consult beverage companies that are making RTDs, ready-to-drink cocktails in a small can, we are an advocate to the small can because there's something that happens in the consumer psyche that when you get to 1/4 of a can left, you want to open another can or buy another can. So there's a psyche there that happens. It's ingrained in all of us. It's called a six-pack psyche. The reason why six-packs sell more than 2 liters. 2 liters of soda seem incredibly difficult to finish, but a 12-ounce can of soda does not. So when you drink a 12-ounce can of soda, you're actually taking 6 cans, and every time you drink one, there's 1 can less, and you have this feeling of you need to go buy more. Hmm. Whereas you drink a 2-liter, you don't go buy more until the 2-liter is empty. But you will buy more of the 6-packs when you get to 2 cans. So the logic, and this is just human nature. So the logic behind canned cannabis beverage is that when you look at the 6-pack you bought of can and you have only 2 left, you feel the need to go back to the dispensary or wherever and reload. Whereas that big bottle that is not clear, it's actually like a frosted plastic of some sort. You don't know where you are in it. You don't know when it's dead. It's like toothpaste. There's always something left. And I hate the big can or the big bottle because of those reasons. And I'm an advocate of the can. So I know it's not your question, but a little bit about consumer psyche as it relates to packaging, as it relates to what you and I are both talking about, which is this big drink. Yeah.
All right, Brian. So before we go, what are your two favorite, I would say your favorite cannabis product and your favorite spirits or wine product or brand?
Got it. Well, I have to say can, obviously, because we're equity holders, but I would say Dogwalkers, I enjoy, and I like Mindy's makes a great edible that's, it's like really like chewing on Skittles. So that's quite good from a cannabis front. And from a booze front, I am remarkably simple for having spent an entirety of my career in beverage. I like Hendrix and tonic. I like Sapphire, Bombay Sapphire and tonic. And that's what I like. And I know people ask me all the time, almost daily, hey, what do you have that's crazy and unique and new? And I'm like, well, I've got 50 different kinds of gins in my bar and I've got one kind of bourbon. So I am, I'm a simpleton when it comes to my choices. But my feeling about all that is that I don't want to waste valuable intellectual power trying to discover the next new when I know what the current great is.
There you go. I love it. All right, Brian. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on and chit-chatting about, you know, cannabis and the spirit space. And obviously a lot is going to unfold. When we hit federal legalization, I think things will change substantially. So we'll have to have you come back and talk about some of the progress.
Jeff, thanks for having me on the show. And I really appreciate 32 minutes of allowing me to pontificate.
I love it. Brian Rick, Managing General Partner at InvestBev. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.